attempt to notify the victim 30 days before a parole release hearing, and I will advise the subcommittee members because I heard the bill that we've changed the language. If you look at the reconstitution bill, we've changed the language to say all hearings where release is to be considered by the parole board. The victim would have the right to appear before the board personally or by counsel and express views about the crime and the persons responsible. The bill allows the victim to have access to non-confidential information the corrections division will rely upon at that hearing. The bill provides protection to a victim where the defendant is released before judgment in a prosecution for criminal homicide. Photograph of the victim while alive would be admissible evidence. Judges are required to take the convenience of the victim into consideration when there is a motion for a postponement or change of trial. The bill sets standards for consecutive sentencing and merger of crimes consistent with the other bill that you've already acted on today. It provides protection for the individual who serves as a juror or witness in case their employer penalizes them for participating in that process. It allows that person to file a suit for unlawful employment practice. The committee heard extensive testimony and spent several hours on this bill on a companion bill, House Bill 2895. And this bill reflects hours of work and the final compromise of that committee. The amendments are actually described in the measure of the function of the measure and staff measure analysis. And as I recall, the only thing that possibly left for the committee, for the subcommittee, because they didn't hear the issue, is the amendment proposed by Mr. Coombs last week, which has been processed by legislative council. They did not redraft it, they just processed it. That was given to them in writing.
Okay. At this point, let's ask Mr. Coombs and anyone you'd like to have come forward with you, Bob, to speak to the amendment that council just described. And if you want to make any additional brief comments, please feel welcome to do so. And we are speaking to the amendment identified as processed by but not drafted by LC 2594-4, May 31st, identified further by Bob Coon's name and the date 6-3-85. Mr. Coons, if you'd like to just describe basically the purpose of this amendment, and if necessary, we can go into further detail in the language.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Bob Coons. I'm here representing the Governor's Commission Against Violent Crime. This is where this amendment came from, and Representative Spring, the Chairman, has agreed to allow this to be heard as part of this bill. We're looking for a vehicle to move it into the legislative process. Essentially, what it does is that it brings the expungement rules that now apply into sync with Senate Bill 414, which is the age of remand bill that passed the Senate 28-2 here a few days ago. And this would bring the expungement rules in into sync for those particular crimes that are outlined in the new age of remand bill. That's essentially what it does for those crimes. I believe it's murder, rape, robbery, sodomy, those four or five crimes that are outlined in that bill. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Coons?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, whoever.
Representative Peterson.
If I may, Mr. Coons, has this happened in any other states? Is this beginning to be more common procedure, or is this a new concept?
I can't tell you, Representative Peterson. I frankly do not know. If I just might add, the feeling of the Governor's Commission was that there was no particular fuss with sealing the records, but we're talking about expungement here. And we are talking about heinous crimes. We're not talking about the lesser crimes in this case.
Okay, are there any further questions? Representative Miller, a motion on the amendments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move we adopt the amendments labeled LC 1707 or 2594-4 attachment to the bill.
Thank you. Representative Miller moves the amendments to 2594 identified as LC 2594-45-3185, and further identified by Mr. Coons. Is there further discussion on those amendments? Is there any objection to those amendments? Not, they're adopted. Council, do you have any further comments on the measure before us?
No, I will only say this is quite a large bill, and the committee did a lot of different work on it, and I will assure the committee that I will go through everything one more time before it goes to the floor, if you vote it to the floor, to make sure that everything's there and it's consistent with what the committee did. I've done that once already, so I'll check again.
Council, it's been brought to my attention that on page 11, section 25, though we list in these amendments that we have repealed provisions relating to stop and frisk, in fact, that was not the action of the subcommittee. Could you clarify that, please?
Quite frankly, Mr. Chair, I don't recall, but as I said, I will check back through those sections. It was my intention to look at each one of those sections this morning and make sure that it was consistent, and I did not have the time to do that, and I'd be happy to do it as soon as the committee's done.
Okay.
There are several minutes. I mean, there's minutes this thick on this bill. I have to check that.
Okay. I think we've taken action on all the amendments before us, either in subcommittee or today on the two additional amendments. So I think we're prepared for a motion on the bill. And it's my understanding, Council, that though many of the amendments originally presented in Representative Miller's bill 2898 were adopted, many were not. There was a fiscal impact on 2898, which indicated a fiscal impact from various sources in excess of $3 million. That amount, I would guess, has been substantially reduced. However, it appears to the chair that there is probably still some fiscal impact. And for that reason, it appears it would be necessary to send the measure down to Ways and Means Committee. And I would think that a motion should so reflect.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Phillips.
If you look at page 2 of the bill, line 31, we're talking about victims being notified. Council, in her text on this, recall that any hearing to determine or redetermine a parole release date, that the victim must be notified at least 30 days before. There is essentially at no time in which they have a hearing for an inmate within the parole of a penitentiary system when release date is not somehow either brought up or affected. So what we're saying here is a blanket, under all circumstances in all hearings, we've got to notify the person.
Well, that, I think you put your finger on one of the issues. Maybe council can speak to what the intent or what the language hopefully accomplishes. Council, do you want to try to respond?
Well, let me, I recall pretty clearly the hearing in which we acted on this particular section, Representative Phillips, and as I recall, the original language of the bill wasn't satisfactory. And you asked that we try to come up with some language that would say they would be notified of all hearings that had to do with the release date. When I talked to legislative council, I suggested that they choose language that would achieve that purpose. I hadn't really thought through the fact that maybe every single hearing would have something to do with a release date. But I tried to comply with your intention, which was to make sure that the victim would be at those hearings if there was release considered. I'm sure you could redraft it another way if you could give us some guidance.
Could I ask the member of the parole board who's here to come forth?
Mr. Jones, if you could perhaps respond to this issue, or Representative Phillips, if you want to restate the question.
If I could ask you a question, sir. What, could you suggest any language that perhaps would tighten it down a little bit further? I think what the people were looking for was when the person was actually going to be released, if there was a final shot that the victim could put in, or the first time that they were making a determination as to the length of stay, to get the input from the victim at that time, but not perhaps every step along the way. I don't want to see the parole board or the correction system or the DA caught up in a maze of every time there's a hearing, we go through that notification process and eventually frustrate the victim at that these are not necessarily hearings that he or she may want to go to, and by the time you get to the one that really is important, they've given up on the system.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Charles Jones, member of the Board of Parole, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips. In the normal process, we do all of the fact-finding and decision-making at the time of the prison term hearing. It is only in cases where there is a need for a psychological evaluation because of, one, the person was committed as a dangerous offender, or the board on its own motion has determined that there are at least some emotional problems that should be addressed, will we see that individual again, especially when the sentence is 5 years or less. So any input that would be made would have to be made at the prison term hearing, because at that hearing we set the conditions of parole, the period for minimum supervision, the entire thing, and we indicate to the prisoner at that time, unless there is adverse institutional misconduct, which calls for a disciplinary hearing in the institution and a request from the corrections division that the term be extended, we will not see that individual again unless that's a circumstance, or we are notified that there is not an adequate release plan by the release services, in which case release is only deferred for 90 days. And the other two instances, as I said, the individual is seriously emotionally disturbed at that time, found to be a danger to himself and to others, or there has been adverse institutional conduct, which calls for an extension based on a recommendation from the division. If none of these occur, we don't see him again. So any input that would be referred to in the bill would have to be at the prison term hearing, which comes within the first 6 months of the period of incarceration.
Following that, then it wouldn't it be best to say to notify at least 30 days before the prison term hearing and just have it right there?
Yes, that would be the only way it would be operational.
Okay, Representative Phillips, would you like to make that motion conceptually and work with counsel on the exact language?
Consider that to be a motion.
Okay, Representative Phillips, do you want to restate that just real briefly?
That on line 31, page 2 of the bill we're working on, after the words at least 30 days before, I would delete the current language and put the words prison term hearing.
Okay.
That's pretty consistent language, I think, with parole board, so.
Okay. As to the exact language, if the committee feels comfortable with adopting this, we'll allow Representative Phillips and counsel to work on that. Before I take any further questions, Mr. Coons, did you want to be heard on this amendment or discussion? Or Ms. Odey? Why don't you come up forward if you would?
I would like to ask, I think the only thing that I would like to ask you, Mr. Chairman, isn't there a procedure that after 5 years they can apply for a time cut or something like a percentage time cut?
Yes. For sentences, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead and feel free to respond.
The rules provide that people who have, let's say, incarceration prayers, not sentences, incarceration prayers that exceed 6 years, they can, after the 5 years, they can petition the board for a hearing for a reduction of term. However, that reduction of term does not come into being or will not be granted unless there is a positive recommendation made by the parent institution for the individual. In other words, the individual can petition for a hearing for a reduction of term, but if there is no positive recommendation from the superintendent, then of course no reduction is granted. And that reduction can only be up to 20% of the time in, so that reduction could amount to a year. Just that a person with five years in on a six-year term, granted the release could be parole considered and ordered at that time.
Okay.
Representative Phillips.
To counsel. Is there anything in this bill that requires when an individual is going to be released, either before the 5 years or petitions for a redemption of time after 6 years, that they be notified as to the release? Not that they have any input in it, but just that they are notified as to the release of that individual.
I think, Representative Phillips, if you turn the page to page 3 of the Constitutive Bill, section 7, it says prior to the release on parole of any person confined these institutions, the chairperson of the State Board of Parole shall inform the Corrections Division of that prospective date. If the victim has requested to be notified and has furnished a current address to the Board of the division shall also notify the victim.
Representative Phillips.
Knowing that, the only way I still think that should be written for the first prison term hearing, if there's a concern among the committee that at a later date, if you can say, and I believe it should say specifically, if the prisoner petitions for a reduction in term prior to that hearing, the victim be notified. But this open-ended language of any hearing to determine, I'd rather have it spelled out clearly in statute as to the intentions. And Mr. Jones, perhaps you could give me some feeling on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, that hearing is really not a term reduction hearing. That hearing is a personal review of the individual's performance. The possibility of a term reduction is a second-level consideration, as I said, subject to the positive recommendation from the institution. Actually, the 5 years that we're talking about really is an outgrowth of 2345, I believe, which was the 75 session. That was a bill by Representative Katz, if you might remember, Mr. Springer, to keep people from getting lost in the institution. And at that time, legislation was passed that said during not to exceed 24 months, each individual would be given a personal review just for us to keep track on them, because people get lost in that system and never be seen for anything. So we initially, in 1976, set up the two-year schedule. Then, of course, when 2013 was passed in 1977, that was modified away from the every 2 years to then a 5, then a 3, 3, 3 for all of the periods thereafter. And for the same purpose, to again keep people from getting lost in the system who have extended prison terms. And the term reduction only became an adjunct to that. The review is not for a prison term reduction.
Representative Phillips. Mr. Jones, isn't it true, at least I believe it used to be, that if I were a victim and I came in and prepared some material for you, or my counsel did, that it would be kept in the inmate's file, so at any petition by an inmate for a review, that would still be available to the board?
That becomes a part of the file. In a lot of cases, it goes into the confidential section because of the type of information that may be involved, but that is a part of the file, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on this subject from the witnesses? Representative Phillips, do you want to take another cut at sort of stating conceptually what you, how you want the language in this subsection to read?
Well, all I want, Mr. Chair, is that we allow or at least notify the individual at least 30 days for the prison release hearing, that initial hearing in which I think the victims can be immediately or hopefully soon after the trial, their information will be most pertinent and it'll be placed in the file, most likely in the confidential section of the file. I think at that point, that's when so I'd like to take that as a single motion, and if another member of the committee wanted to make an additional motion to it, that's their choice.
Okay, Representative Phillips so moves. Counsel, do you feel you are sufficiently clear to assist in the preparation of that language that will be in the bill? Okay. Are there any questions about what Representative Phillips has proposed as an amendment to this subsection? Are there any objections to that amendment? If not, be considered adopted. Are there further amendments? Representative Miller?
Chairman, the benefit of some of the sub two members that weren't here, recollection of what council said, we went through this and we compromised on some things, and some things we just plain voted pursuant to that, I'd like to just raise, I think, just one issue that we went through and was somewhat contested, and see if it has any better success in the full committee than it had in the subcommittee, and that is the issue of preemptory challenges. And the motion would be to cause the challenges to be equalized. Other than ordinary criminal trials, be 6-6 from the current 6-3 in the cases involving capital offenses, to include the death penalty cases, 12-12.
Okay, I don't know if we have the exact language, but if members feel comfortable proceeding conceptually on the motion, Representative Miller moves to further amend the bill by adding language to, I believe, in all felony cases, with the exception of capital cases, that the challenges shall be 6-6, and that in capital cases, the challenges shall be 12-12. Is that?
That's correct.
Correct. The misdemeanors would remain at 3-3.
Right.
Okay. Representative Miller so moves. Representative Kopetsky?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we've dealt with this issue in a different bill. In fact, I think the bill was on the floor this afternoon and it's being moved back to committee. There was a minority report offered on the bill, and because of a technical problem with the minority report, I think the proponent of the minority report, as my understanding, asked that it be referred back so that take another look at, I don't know if it's the drafting of the minority report or the majority report or both, but I think we're considering the issue in another bill. I mean, this committee has dealt with this issue. I'm going to resist the motion.
Okay, is there further discussion on the motion? Okay, the chair would only note that the chair concurs with Representative Kopetsky's comments. Let me ask just a quick question, if I may, for Mr. Bradley. John, just, I know you may not be prepared for this exact question, but I hope there are ones you might be able to answer. Just about what percentage of the cases in Multnomah County, the felony cases and the aggravated murder cases, the kinds of cases we're speaking about here, how many of those are pled out prior to trial?
You're talking about aggravated murder?
No, the felony cases, and you can deal with the aggravated murder completely separately because I know we just got a small number there, but can you just give us a ballpark figure how many felony cases plea out prior to trial?
Okay, my name is John Bradley. I represent Multnomah County. I would say upwards to 90%, perhaps more than 90% currently.
And of the cases that go to trial, can you give us a ballpark figure, again, talking about felony court, and let's set aside the aggravated murder cases as a special category. Can you give us a ballpark figure as to what the, quote, conviction rate is?
That's a, when you say conviction rate, you may have to talk about
lesser included
as opposed, for instance, someone's charged with burglary in the first degree, which is a 20-year felony. The jury comes back and finds the person guilty of trespass in the first degree, which is a misdemeanor. That you could say is a conviction, but I think when you look at it from a prosecutor's standpoint, it would be hard. I would say, looking at property crimes offenses in our county, where juries return guilty verdicts on something, I would suggest that that is probably about, and again, this is ballpark because I don't have my statistics with me, about 80% or 90%. On person-to-person offenses, I think there you're talking about 70% to 80%, which is lower than the property offenses.
Okay, I know these are approximate, and I apologize for not giving you advance warning on those questions. Thank you. Okay, is there further discussion of Representative Miller's motion? Representative Bunn.
I just inquire now, as I understand what the motion is, we wouldn't in any way reduce the number of challenges that the defendant has. We would keep those at the high level they are, but we would increase the number of DA challenges that
I believe that's correct. If anyone understands this otherwise, please let us know. I believe you're correct, Representative Bennett.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, that would be the same amount then on the word capital cases. Is that the same number all the way up?
President Miller, that's correct, is it not?
12. Right now it's 12 and 6. 12 for the defense, 6 for the prosecutor. It would be just 12 and 12.
Yes.
Right. The defense attorneys would not lose any peremptory challenges under this.
That's true. Representative Bond, to clarify, however, in the lesser offenses, there would be a lesser number of challenges for both. Is that correct, Representative Miller? Aren't there two levels of number of challenges?
Yes.
And again, there are 12 for the capital offenses and
life sentences and death penalty.
Okay, the number for other felonies would be?
For other criminal trials would be 6 and 6. One additional comment I have in light of a comment by Representative Kopetsky is that the subcommittee that dealt with this issue and not the full committee.
Somehow the bill got to the floor.
I think you're speaking of 2073, which in the committee report as further and also in the minority report deals with very similar, if not the same, issue.
Isn't the same statute?
I, without looking at it, I assume probably, it's the same or very close to it. Is there further discussion on the motion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Repeat the motion, please.
Yeah. Representative Miller, would you like to repeat the motion?
The motion, Representative Bellamy, is to equalize the number of peremptory challenges given to the state and the defense attorney. Right now, the defense has twice as many. This amendment would not decrease the number of challenges available to the defense. It would merely equalize the situation.
Any further questions or discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
No.
Hill? Pepsi?
No.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
No. Motion fails. Okay, are there any further amendments? Okay, now, again, counsel, I know that we have a fiscal impact, which I know will have to be redone, but I'm assuming, again, that there remains some fiscal impact. And if there's any question about that, we could hold the bill to have that fiscal impact before us, before we act, but I would prefer to move it today with the referral to Ways and Means and hope and be glad to assist anyone who wants to go down there and discuss and ask that this be considered as a matter of urgency in the Ways and Means Committee. Counsel?
I just want to advise the committee that I was called by the staff person court today saying that the fiscal impact statement couldn't be done today, but it was being worked on and would be done shortly.
Okay.
And this is a revised fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you. Representative Miller, a motion on the bill is amended.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I can comment briefly prior to that, just for getting information for the other subcommittee. It occurred to us that a section, for instance, in 2898 that was estimated, I believe, to have about $1 million impact. The identical language in 2594 was indeterminate. So I think the chairman has selected a wise course in sending this to Ways and Means. And Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 2594 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee, but they do pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Miller moves House Bill 2594 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, and I would add the recommendation that be printed in gross for that purpose. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Bellamy?
Aye.
Bunn?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye.
Pepsi? Kowalski?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Speaking on behalf of myself and I think all who worked on the subcommittee, want to thank all Ms. Odie, Mr. Coons. I'm sure there are a lot of people who I'm not going to identify who put a lot of time and effort, members of the subcommittee and staff, for working as hard as they did on this very important issue. And as I've indicated, the chair, I'm sure vice chair, will do everything within our power to ensure that this bill is down to Ways and Means just as soon as it's humanly possible. And I'm sure that each of us would be glad to appear before the Ways and Means Committee and do all that we can to assure that it will receive appropriate consideration in the Ways and Means Committee. I don't believe there's any further business to come before the full committee. If not, the chair will recess or adjourn the full committee and give notice that the subcommittee will return in approximately 10 minutes to take up and hopefully conclude the balance of our work session in Subcommittee 1. So if there's no further business before the full committee, we shall be adjourned in the subcommittee.